Oh, hello.
If you're not angry, you're not paying enough attention, Ryan. It's okay to be angry. Anger is good. It's kind of fucked up if you're not angry, Ryan. My blood pressure's high and I'm losing my hair, but at least I'm angry. Are you angry, Ryan?
Turn the video off.
You turn that video off. Oh, did I do it? I think
You did. You did.
so. Oh!
Wait, do you have your headset on?
No, I'll get
Sorry for the technical difficulties,
It's
folks.
not. Ugh, fucking headset. I have the headset just so you listeners know what my headset looks like. It looks like a 13-year-old boy saved up his money and bought it on Amazon.
To play his games.
Yeah, can you hear me?
I can. Can you hear me?
If you're not angry, then you're broken. Are you broken or are you whole, Ryan? I don't want to go on your $4,000 retreat. You've got too much money. Go fuck yourself, Ryan.
Good morning.
Good morning. So, I just got off my therapy appointment. I'm feeling like I filled up my self-care well.
Fair.
No, I don't. I'm going to be honest with
Did
you.
you fill up your self-care Barbie?
Yes, self-care Barbie is at 75%, so that's good. I basically like get on a call with my therapist every so often, and I'm like, should I be sectioned? I shouldn't be sectioned, right? I'm okay. And she's like, you're totally fine. And I'm like, okay, thanks. All right, talk. Here's my copay. I'll talk to you in a week or so.
That's fair. That's fair. It's
So,
good to check.
coronavirus, how you feeling?
I'm feeling all right. I'm feeling all right.
I'm glad Pence is at the helm, so he
Oh yeah,
go pray on it.
that's really comforting. I don't think I can process any of that
Know, that's fair. The last debate made me want to like, it just made me itchy. It made me itchy.
The one that happened on Tuesday.
Yeah.
I only saw the last bit of it because I was teaching the yogas. Was it? I heard it was more snipey than the last.
It was. The moderators kind of shit the bed on it.
Yeah, well, that'll happen.
It'll. So, I've been thinking a lot about a lot of things. But
What a novel concept for us.
it's really, you know what it is? I just realized that I think compared to like the people in my life that I tend to be drawn to, that tend to be around me, are overthinkers. They're people that are just literally sort of like cynically or optimistically or critically engaged with like 35 different things at once, and they just aren't like they're happy-go-lucky, but that's just so that they don't like fling themselves off of a anyways, I tend to ally myself with overthinkers.
Sure.
I'm sorry, it's just your sure. But one of
I don't particularly like that word overthinking, but we can get into that later.
No, you're right. You're right, because that's the anti-intellectualism at play.
Yeah.
Even that phrase is like, you know, just as a culture, we have a long history of anti-intellectualism. So to call thinking
Yeah.
overthinking.
Well, there's thinking well, and then there's thinking yourself into a, potentially detrimental emotional state, and quite a bit of nuance in between.
So I've been thinking about yoga as a product and how what we offer in a capitalist context means that when we teach classes or teacher trainings or workshops and then receive feedback about that, we're being evaluated as a service, as a product service.
Sure, yeah.
And this is the same thing in, any college in America. Like, you can rate your teachers, you can provide feedback for them, and
And those ratings often are the main thing that go into whether or not you get a raise or a promotion or another
or get to
class in
keep your
terms of,
job.
yeah, or get to keep your job, precisely.
Yeah, so then what we're doing is starting to mold our teaching to the tastes and predilections of our students. And there is part of me that's like, no, I totally get it. If a teacher comes in and does a shit job, and the only way to know if the teacher does a shit job is from evaluations, that's one thing. But like, if somebody just doesn't like what you're teaching or how you're teaching it, there's also like, I don't know. It's interesting to me because I think it just leads us down a road of sort of like a popularity contest. And also, like, when you teach challenging material that confronts long-held biases and beliefs in your students, the likelihood that you're going to get some bad reviews is pretty high. And then
Sure.
if you get a bunch of bad reviews and then you're taking, then like, I see how some of my favorite teachers in college, a lot of them were always like at fear of risk about their job. There was a lot of job insecurity with some of my favorite teachers. And those also happened to be the teachers that were saying like the riskiest things.
Yeah.
So how do we design a teacher training that makes no one happy? Because that's the only way to have a teacher training that's
Well, I mean, I think that that's multi-layered because when you okay, so a couple of things. There's the truth that like teacher training wasn't a thing at some point, and a lot of the teachers that we sort of revere and have really shaped what we're doing in modern postural yoga for better or for worse. They didn't really have to do a teacher training; they just practiced a lot of yoga, and then honed, their teaching. And we would be, I would hesitate to say that they were, that popularity thing wasn't at play back then. It was just happening on a much smaller scale because there wasn't a million yoga studios and yoga trainings and programs out there, right? So I think the thing that I always come back to with teacher training is that it has become the place where people actually learn about yoga, which I think is the problematic thing. I would really like teacher training to be about a conversation of pedagogy, but what it ends up being is a conversation of, concepts that, I try to be I did really learn many of these concepts in public classes. Like the things that I end up teaching in a training And even the things that I learned in those initial teacher trainings that I did however many years ago, it still felt like in the trainings they were just reiterating concepts that had already been gone over and over and over and over and again in classes. And now when I step in front of a teacher training room, it doesn't actually feel that way. It feels like, okay, now this is the place where we learn all of the stuff, and then classes are the places where people just get to, attempt to have an experience of practice. And I think that's, I mean, that just is what it is. Like, there's no way that I can change that. So the way that I've been thinking, especially in terms of more of the situation I'm in now, which is often stepping into someone else's teacher training to teach, the thing that I am holding, though I don't necessarily say it out loud, is I don't really care if you ever go teach any of this material. I want to teach you material that I think is beneficial towards your own practice. And then because I'm only seeing you for like 3 to 6 hours over the course of 200 or 300, like that's kind of the best I could hope for is that something I say is beneficial to someone in the room's home practice. And I reserve, lengthy conversations of pedagogy for people whom I have more of a like mentor-ish relationship with. Those were just some thoughts that I threw at the wall. And I can hear you having feelings about them.
I just think it makes sense to mirror a liberal arts education, just exposure to different ideas. And like part of exposure to different ideas is ones that might be I don't like babying students or appealing to their comfort zone. I don't like using, I think one of a better place for this conversation to exist would be like, let's talk about how we teach something specific. And by we, I mean like, Yoga Works teacher trainings, Core Power teacher trainings, the average sort of vinyasa to 200 hour anatomy course. Of course, there are exceptions, I get it. But on the whole, how we teach anatomy is just such an interesting place to start with what the hell we're doing in teacher trainings. For me, there's part of me that's like, throw it out the window. Like, what are you doing? Like, throw it out the window until everyone can decide what the scope of freaking teaching is, like what the scope of practice is,
That's fair.
because it's so all over the map how people are approaching teaching anatomy. And what I've seen more often than not is like signposts that lead to extremism of thought, rigidity of thought, where the thing I care about is like people that are thinking about what they're teaching and why. And I don't have to agree with them, but they need to at least be thinking about it. And I'm always shocked at how many people are like, yeah, but this one viewpoint was presented to me and so is therefore a fact. It
Well, and
never,
it's
but
all.
it's like that everywhere. This isn't like unique to the yoga classroom. You go into a freaking any college, and any liberal arts college in the United States, and that's like the. So what are parents doing to their kids that is making these kids so fucking dumb? I'm sorry, dumb's the wrong word, but so shocked at the plurality of possibilities. Because this isn't about yoga. This is about thinking. Oh, now I'm getting angry.
I mean, wasn't it inevitable?
That's how I started off the podcast. Sorry. It was a song, a little ditty. Yeah. Why are people, why is it so hard to hold two thoughts that are diametrically opposed, but potentially both have elements of truth in them at once? Because what the hell is truth? Oh, yeah. The N, what is it? NPR is doing a truth series podcast coming up. But,
Well, no, I and what and specifically the study and practice of yoga should be leading people, hopefully, to be able to hold opposing points of view at the same time. And I think specifically with anatomy, there's a there's a confusion often as to the why. Meaning, are we learning anatomy so that we can do complex poses? Are we learning anatomy? Sometimes people will point to the safety conversation, which is questionable at best.
How do you keep your students safe? Okay, Jesus. It's always just white women that are so concerned with the safety of alignment.
Sure.
I'm losing it. This is it. This is where I get fired. What is
Yep.
going on with the God complex around safety?
Yeah.
Sorry.
Then there's learning anatomy so that you can say, honestly, I think there's some in desire to learn anatomy so that you can say fancy things to students and talk about things with their Latin terms, and there's like a
Yep.
superiority when like oftentimes like there, I mean, we live in Boston. There are fucking physicians in the
I know. I know.
room. Which is not to say that even physicians know everything about anatomy, because physicians are training is so specific and specialized that like while they may know like one part of the body in like a very micro anatomical way, there might be another part of the body that they're completely, might have less knowledge of, and top it off with the fact that they're just human beings. Like, there's a limit to how much information they can hold in their head at one time. Anyways, but the thing is I don't know that anyone needs, and this is where we have to like parse it out a little bit. I don't know that anyone needs to know the names of the muscles in their body in order to have a safe and sustainable yoga practice. Do I think they need to know that they're like what a muscle, like, is it helpful to know that yes, there are muscles and yes, there are joints and yes, there are bones and they move in a particular way, and yes, but I don't think the microanatomy, and I mean even like just down to like this quadricep versus this quadricep versus this quadricep versus this one, like I'm not sure how that's useful until there's a necessity for it to be useful. And what I mean by that is like someone's awareness of the musculature of the thigh might just be, I have a thigh, it has muscle. Period. And then maybe they start experiencing discomfort in that musculature, and their yoga practice might lead them to go, okay, so what's actually in there? And then the inquiry leads them to have a more specific understanding of the musculature and the structure of their thigh. But to like r require that someone know that? I just don't know. And as with any sort of learning environment that we have all become accustomed to, even if, like, I had to create a exam that the yoga teachers had to take to graduate their 200 hour, they're just going to learn it for the purpose of the exam and then forget it, because it's not readily necessary for the actual act of teaching yoga in a drop-in setting. So my bias is always the primary reason that I study anatomy is so that I, and biomechanics and physiology and all that, is so that I have a clear understanding of the choices that I can make with my own body. Secondarily, there is some benefit to knowing that intellectually that a structure exists in the body, and then trying to interocept that structure. Whether or not I feel it with any accuracy is beyond the point, because there's so much ambiguity in what you're feeling in the body that it doesn't, like, it's, but the act of trying to feel internally what is going on is a useful act. So in many ways, you know, as in many people have said this, Leslie Kaminoff, Amy Matthews, everybody, but, you know, the anatomical framework is in many ways just a map, and is giving you a way to organize your awareness, in order to practice. And yes, there may be some optimal positions for the joint structure, for the musculature, that people can talk about. You know, this is classically in you know, your typical yoga teacher training, like, name the five alignment points for Warrior Two. And among them is almost always going to be front thigh parallel with the floor. Yes?
Yeah.
Which is where we'll get, so, but if we actually go to unpack that, it's like, okay, so why does the lunge have to be that deep in order to experience Warrior Two? And then the next question is, well, if you look at the contour of your, is it the contour of the top of the thigh that's parallel? Is it the contour of the bottom of the thigh that's parallel? Whose thigh? Whose hip socket? Whose knee? Who's this? Who's that? So sometimes I think the things that were said in an effort to teach a room full of people some physical postures got codified as, this is the way that you do it, and this is the safe way that you do it, and this is the optimal way that you do it. When absent a human being in front of me, I could not hypothesize an optimal way to do any given pose.
Well, and it also demands a stripping down of the word optimal. Like,
Sure. I mean, to me, the optimal is optimal towards what intention?
Optimal towards what intention? Exactly. So, like, if you're teaching art, I mean, it's like, well, here's red in oil and here's red in watercolor, and they are different. And what do you want to do? And understand that one is not wrong and one is not right. Yeah. These are just different tools with which to create and to inquire. So to me, it is just a harmful rhetorical device to be like, this is the one safe way to do something, and to assume that there is this singularity of body that is like an applicable fucking
sure
construct to apply arbitrary alignment to. And yeah. I believe alignment truly is not only arbitrary, but is a deeply artful exercise towards inquiry. That's it.
Yes. No, I would agree with that. And I think, and then the thing that I would, the only argument that I can ascribe towards that sort of typical view of teaching, quote unquote, alignment is that there does need to be a reference point. It's just that we understand it, we have to understand it as a reference point, not as a fixed situation. So, like, Tadasana is a useful reference point. And even within that, there are ample amount of choices that people can make. But the reference point is worthwhile. A standing neutral pose with the feet underneath the hips, more or less. And in my mind, for my teaching and my practice, thumbs and biceps pointing forward is a worthwhile reference point from which I can build any number of poses into any amount of compoundness or complexity that I see is see to be interesting on a given day. So I do think the reference point is useful. It's just it has to be stated that this is a reference. This is the reference of
This is where the conversation starts.
Yes, exactly. This is where the conversation starts. And then from here, we can have any number of conversations. It's just so often the conversation begins in a posture that is so compound in terms of action that it becomes the conversation of what's right and what's wrong. And I think the tricky thing is that it's not a, what's the word I want to use here? It is, if you had a room full of relatively able-bodied human beings to say that these are the 5 points to memorize for this pose, that is a quick way to quote unquote teach a yoga posture. But then what? But then what? So I just, and that also, that approach doesn't leave people open to consider a plurality of possibilities. So it's like, how do you teach the reference point without making everything other than the reference point a variation or a modification or a, an alternate or a, or without othering the rest of the a million possibilities that are feasible within the vague abstract outline of Parsvakonasana. Long pause.
Well, so what do you suggest?
I think it's difficult given the expectation of a drop-in class. However, I do think there is a way to teach people what the choices are in simple postures, meaning that, like, yes, your knee is more complicated than just folding, unfolding, but basically it just folds and unfolds. And your ankle pretty much just points and, or really flexes and rocks side to side. You can do those actions in combination with one another, but fundamentally, those are the two actions. Like in simple posture, there is a way, in simple somatic exercises, there is a way to articulate through the joints and then very slowly rack up the variables into a compound position. And then to say, at some point, okay, can you use the choices that you're making to respond to the sensations that you're feeling in the body in the context of any given posture? And then that would lead to, over potentially many years of practice, people having an idea, perhaps at least a starting point of where to go. Okay, in this posture, I can feel this part of my experience very clearly, and because I am feeling this part of my experience is a little bit off, I'm going to, in a sense of disease, I'm going to do this posture with the aim of trying to address the gripping in my lower back. And I know within this posture, I'm not just going to lie there and chill, that I have any number of choices that I could make with any number of joints in my body. It's like it's trying in a very long form type of way to teach people how to do something that, you know, without using a controversial term, to be their own yoga therapist.
Yes. So when we have, as part of the only place that we're actually learning, you know, some tools for that is like the public classroom, and then second layer is the 200 hour. And then what we have is
And
this
then,
stripping of agency from your own internal interoception, your proprioception, when we're torn away from that and sold a bill of goods in the form of one or two teachers pointing at a manual, which is a picture of assuredly another thin 30-year-old white woman, what we have is something that is super destructive. And that might sound
yeah.
how this might sound sound hyperbolic, but I really don't believe that it is. I think that it is insidious, and it matters, and it is a big fucking deal. So
But and
I
but then at
call you to
that
look at your manuals,
at that
yoga
point
studios.
though, at that point, you've already jumped the gun though. Because it's no longer about how do you feel this in your own body. It's about how do you articulate this to someone else. So if the layer where we're actually learning the concepts that are useful in practice, whether it's the concepts that I find useful in practice or the concepts that you find useful in practice, and then immediately we're jumping the conversation over to pedagogy, and the pedagogy is really defined by the fact that a drop-in class needs to have this many human beings in it in order to be profitable, then you get this feedback loop that is really not useful. Because yoga's kind of boring. And it's meant to be.
Oh, I don't think that for a second. It's not meant to be boring.
No, yoga's really kind of boring. And
Well,
like, we're constantly overlaying this other shit to lessen the boredom. Just think, 10 years ago, like, music played in the classroom would have been like a novel thing. Heat. you know, all of these styles that have, like, with the exception of Bikram, that have the heat cranked up. Like, I remember going to a Baptiste studio where the heat was 82. And then slowly getting cranked up over 100. It's just like we have to give ourselves some other stimulus.
Because we're just, I don't know though. Like, I mean, you look at the Chicago World Fair when some yoga asana was one of the early introductions of yoga asana to the United States. It was pretty unboring. It was some circus trick shit. So I always think that there's an element of unboring, shocking, sort of visually consumable part of the practice that is inherently in the direction away of being entertaining.
Yeah.
So, and I also think that I spend a lot of, you did hit a sore spot for me. I spend a lot of time once I get folks in Warrior Two talking about how boring Warrior Two is.
Sure.
And then sort of deconstructing that. Like, well, how is it not boring? Well, this might be happening, or is this happening, or what might it feel like if you blah, blah, blah. And then I think, well, you know, it's just okay to like build new asana and think about things in a new way. There's only so many ways the body moves, but there's sure as shit more than is being presented in in the average 200-hour teacher training manual.
Sure.
All of this makes my tits
Also,
hurt. I just need you to know my boobs hurt from this conversation.
I have never seen a useful teacher training manual.
They don't exist. They're hate machines. They're just a little fucking bag of bias.
I
Oh, do you want your hate pamphlet? Here
I
it
mean, to be, and I just want to be clear, I have written and constructed a large number of
Oh,
teacher
no.
training
This is
manuals.
true. And I have consulted on the production of at least six people's 200-hour teacher training manuals. So we are not coming from a place of like, we are talking about one specific studio. Oh, no, 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 no. We are coming from a place of we've been up to our elbows deep in several people's, manuals. This is something that we know.
Yeah. Now, do I think
So
that,
fire us.
do I believe that somewhere out there, that with enough time and enough money, that I could take a whole year off of everything and write a very, very useful teacher training manual? Maybe. I have my doubts, but I know that I could, but I know that it would probably not involve an exhaustive amount of photographs of people in asana. Like I think it would be hard to have no photographs. But, or no sketches, or no, you know, I think sketches are better sometimes. Did Barbara's have sketches? I think Barbara's had like etchings of the pose, as opposed to like a picture of someone in the pose. But I'd have to look. I don't know. It's not on my bookshelf right now. Yeah, I like I it's not that I don't think that there is a usefulness to have some sort of manual. It's just that the ones I've seen have never been useful, and the ones I've constructed for a training, we've like never actually used them.
Yeah, and I just think that, fucking wake up. Bodies are different. Bodies have different ranges of motion. Bodies are taller and fatter and thinner and older. And the one of my favorite parts of the of a prenatal manual by Back at Home Births is where she talks about the pelvic bowl inlet. And how looking at a woman on the outside, you cannot tell whether or not what type of, pubic bowl inlet she
Sure.
had. You don't know just looking at big hips if blah, blah, blah. Anyways, the whole point is like there are exciting and thrilling ranges of diversity anatomically that we have still yet to uncover.
Yes.
Like there's so many different normal intestinal variations from person to person, even within like the same gender the same sex expression, even within like same ethnicities and like different like you know, your belly, your and your intestines can be wildly various in sizes. There's like 13 different types that you could have, you know. So, and that's just one part of the body we're talking about. You know, if you look at like the plurality of hands, like if you ever just lined up people's hands and look at them, like,
or people's the elbow variation.
The elbow is like, a great one.
And so any conversation, just to like bring it back around, like any conversation of anatomy, like it has to begin with a clarity of like, okay, well, what and why? Like what is the thing that we're studying right now, and why are we studying it? And if someone decides that it really is, they're going to teach anatomy because they think it makes students safer, then go for that. You know, like I'm not gonna like say that they're a bad person or something like that. But for me, it's much more of a conversation of the study of anatomy has given me a clarity of the choices that I can make in my body in terms of how I position myself, in terms of how I move through the world, in terms of how I address physical pain, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so if I'm going to teach people about anatomy, those choices don't begin by understanding the names of each individual wrist bone. They begin in bigger chunks. I find so often the anatomical study goes from very, in yoga anyway, goes from like, this is the name of the muscle. This is it, where it attaches. And then this is how it potentially affects the joints that it crosses. And I don't know that that's a good... I don't think that that's necessarily a good starting point. It's a good point to get to at some point if you're interested in it. But I don't think that it's... That level, and doing it in a sort of memorization type way, is necessarily helpful. And if I had all of the time in the world, would, you know, yes, we'd go from big gross anatomy to, okay, now let's see if we can, you know, to what extent we actually can isolate some of this so that we can feel with our own hands what's going on when I point and flex my foot. Great, but this is also part of the problem of the Yoga Alliance standards being structured as like 20 hours for anatomy or 30 or whatever it is now, and then 50 somewhat hours for this and somewhat hours for that, is like, it shouldn't really be an isolated subject. In my mind.
Yeah, totally.
It's just like, if I'm talking about Trikonasana, well, why not fucking talk about the hip joint? Like, it's a good pose to try and feel the clarity and most often lack thereof in someone's hip joint, and I include myself in that assessment. And then being able to feel, okay, so what are my choices within the context of this posture? Now, would I use Trikonasana as the starting point for talking about what is a hip joint And what are the muscles that steer and stabilize it? No, because it's a little too complex for that. But I think that information, if we really are doing an asana teacher training, should be just more interwoven throughout. And I often question what the sort of standalone X hours of anatomy really does for folks, as opposed to being able to understand it within the context of how it might actually be useful information within day-to-day practice.
That's a very good point. You know, it's like the thing we complain about in public school education, like for the kids that aren't inclined to be taught math as an isolated subject, like when you incorporate it into a cooking class or its larger implications, it becomes useful. So integrated education. And I think the same principle should apply to a yoga teacher training. Like that also helps us think about scope of practice in a useful way, you know, because we're talking about anatomy in the moment as it relates to the action of the shape,
Absolutely.
not
Absolutely.
as its own thing. So all of a sudden you've taken, you know, anatomy and physiology 101 and you know, you could go be a fucking nurse on that. No, this is
No.
anatomy and physiology for frickin' yoga teachers. So let's not have it be separate. Let's weave it into how we're talking about inclusivity and how we're talking about sequencing and then it has its own, it has a container that's appropriate.
Yes.
Is anyone going to do that?
No. That's hard to do. Because then it's hard to do in, well, number one, it's hard to do in any training where there is a multitude of teachers who may not be on the same page in terms of anatomy and how they teach it. And I've been thinking about this a lot because I know that sometimes we go back and forth and argue about having a plurality of teachers versus have in a training context versus having a single teacher or two teachers in a or one teacher with some guest appearances in a teacher training. And I had the thought yesterday that while I think having a plurality of voices is useful, I think the thing that I'm more responding to with that plurality of voices is that it's taking place within the context of these arbitrary 200 and 300 hour structures, which doesn't necessarily give you the quote unquote liberal arts experience. If it were held more within the something that more felt like a academic experience, even though it's not, you know, that might people might cringe at that word, but you know, our sort of context for academic experience, then it would give people that I think then there would be more of an understanding that what was happening is okay, so here's an ample amount of time for someone to give context and view to what they're teaching and teach a very, very specific subject over a longer period of time or a very, very specific inquiry over a longer period of time. And then here's, you're going to take this course with someone else, and you're going to take this course with someone else. And then hopefully there is then some sort of integration of those different viewpoints. Or if there's not a formal integration, that there is something that in the realm of practicum that is requiring you to have thought through those different points of view, which might not be totally convergent points of view or totally disparate points of view, but they might be. And that would be where I think the plurality of voices would be more effective, because I often worry when I'm in a situation where there is that plurality of voices, that we could hit the sweet spot and have people be very positively confused to the point where they really go and think about it on their own. But then we could go over the line and just make people feel like, fuck yoke, I'm done. And that's a very, very fine line. And in the arbitrary construct of the 200 and 300 hour, I think it's really easy to cross that line. Because I've seen it happen both ways. I've seen positive confusion, and questions arise where I get to be like, okay, I think you should go on your own mat and figure that out yourself. Maybe with some more guidance as to like how one might go about that. And I've seen people just be like, well, this is all crap, and I didn't, I want to either drop out or get my money back because I didn't really learn anything.
You've really heard that both ways.
Yeah.
Well, see, this is where it's a product.
Yep.
I didn't like the product. I think we should just get rid of it. Let's get rid of the product.
Well, in this case, it wasn't really a, it wasn't it, those situations were not I could see how that situation would arise where someone was treating it more like a product. This was really like in the two or three cases that I can think of this, these people were really wanting a professional development type situation, and they didn't feel like they could they didn't feel like it that's what they got, and part of that was because there wasn't enough cohesion between the teachers. Not saying all of it was, but there wasn't enough ability for one teacher to be able to understand the context and view of another teacher, to be able to understand the context and view of yet another teacher, so that a conversation could be had about what the meaning of all of this confusion actually could be. And is there a way to do it perfectly? No, not at all. But I think in many ways the what's the word I'm looking for? The structure is holding us back from figuring out how to solve and improve and evolve.
That's it. Yeah, the structure is a little bit hamstringing us from progress, development, and our research and development, truly,
Yes.
and reimagining what it could be, as if it is an edifice that has existed for far longer than it has. Like, this is
Yes.
an invention. This is a recent invention. So, like, let's not be afraid to shake it up. So the
Yes.
call to action I have for yoga studio owners and people that are part of yoga teacher trainings is look at it and look at what you're cultivating in the students that come to these trainings and ask yourself, is this a group of robots or is this a group of thinkers? And
Yeah.
I know that that's so much larger systemically. Like we, especially in yoga culture, are taught not to criticize or engage critically, and like it's not a positive thing. It doesn't allow us to spiritually bypass quite as quickly when we're forced to think about it. But you know, I don't know. I don't know. I my bandwidth is thinner than it normally is, and I just want to burn everything to the ground, and I know that's not the answer. But if it feels like a slap, it's a slap. If it feels suspicious, it might be suspect. Let's use it not as a negative thing, but as an opportunity to recreate. It's art. It's fucking art. All of it is art. And art should be ugly. By the way, why isn't anybody talking about Elizabeth Warren?
Everybody's talking about Elizabeth
No, everybody's
Warren.
talking about Bernie. Bernie and Trump.
Bernie, is it as windy down there as it is up
It
here?
is. It's quite windy.
Okay. Just at first I thought there was something wrong with the recording, and then I realized it was just the wind, like actually high-pitched whistling outside. I don't know. I have to go vote later.
I just need to be like hugged by a caring, I'm gonna go with like panda bear,
Sure.
like I just need to, no, you know what? I'll be Big Spoon. I need a baby panda to hug.
Need a baby panda to All right. All right.
Or have I've stopped producing thoughts of value. I don't know. I think it's okay to not be liked. That's not what I mean.
What do you mean?
I just think that I'm the type of teacher that gets like really hot and cold responses from students. You know?
You and me
Yeah,
both.
people are very rarely like, "Ah, she's all right." It's either like, "Yeah, we're on the same page, man." Or it's, "That is just over the top offensive. I am clutching my pearls. Oh my gosh." That kind of language and negativity does not belong in my world. You know, and I have to respect that because I am not everybody's cup of tea. I don't want to be everybody's cup of tea. I am not in search of being a somebody's cup of tea.
Sure.
I'm here to present some ideas and to hope that other people come to their own conclusions because they've been exposed to a plurality of ideas and they were not handed a prepackaged righteous manual for fucking whatever. I mean, that's the whole point. I mean, look at the time that we're living in. It's never been more important of fucking like question management. I mean that from a Marxist perspective, not from like a studio perspective.
Kate's determined to get us fired.
I absolutely don't mean our, you know, question our manager. Our managers are pretty good at letting us make some noise and rattle and hum. I just mean like, now is the time to look at our power structures and question some shit. Oh, I think we can call it a day. I'm sick of hearing my own voice.
Oh my God, me too.
Call it. Yeah, so we got an upcoming live event. Shoot us some emails if there's stuff you'd like us to awkwardly talk about in public. Come, please.
Please. There are people signed up.
Good.
I mean like 10 of them, but
Whoa, come harder.
yeah. Is Saturday, April 18th from 6 to 7:30, I believe. And I promise that I will get all of this stuff up on the website soon. Yeah, we didn't talk about the fact that I have taught more in the month of February than I ever have, at least in the past like 7 years.
Oh my gosh.
And I have never been more exhausted. In fact,
This.
Patricia Walden came up to me in the lobby and was like, "You look like you're teaching too much." Was like,
Ryan,
point taken. Point
Ryan,
taken.
Ryan, this won't end well.
Point taken.
Get your
Point
shit
taken.
together.
No, the month of March is a fully, I have no weekend teaching engagements in the month of March. So I have 5 day weeks throughout. We're going to keep it that way. Can't really say the same for April, but at least there's a month. I can get my shit together. Okay.
I love you.
Love you too. Bye.
Bye.